unanimous permit recommendations, and this is Kobe Jones.
Sure.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, rec members, for being here. All right. So just a quick review of the 2016 CMU voucher and permit on antlers. So there are 60 CMUs that were previously approved for their antlers permits and vouchers. 12 are requesting some changes, and 10 will require a Wildlife Board and RAC approval for this year. So this is one of the highlights of the CMU program. You look, you know, there are 1,582 antlers permits. A lot of those are elk. But of those 1,500 or almost 1,600 permits, 1,264 of those go to public hunters. And it's really great to realize the access they're getting to private lands that they probably wouldn't get otherwise. And then 318 vouchers that go to landowners. The way that split's determined is based on the election for bucks and bulls. So if the operator chooses a 90-10 split, private public for bucks and bulls, then 100% of those antlers permits go to the public. 85-15 is a 25-75 split. If they choose an 80-20 buck bull split, 40-60, 75-25, 50-50. Pronghorn is a 60-40 split. That's the only election. And then those permits are always 40-60 for antlerless. So we'll look at the recommendations by region, and what we'll highlight really are the changes, if there are any changes. So in the northern region, Junction Valley, New CWMU, they requested 5 2 doe permits, and that's really because they have some agricultural fields at the bottom of the CWMU that incorporated into the CWMU. And after looking at it, they felt like they could accomplish what they wanted to accomplish with 4. So they just asked us to change it and reduce it by 1. And since this is really, they're the ones dealing with the damage, we agree with that. We recommend approval. Northern Range continued. Deseret took on another CWMU. They had 28 antlerless elk permits on that CWMU. When they took that on, they requested they increase their permits by 30 to be able to harvest there as well. Twin Peaks Goose Creek, this CWMU is on the border with Utah, Nevada, and Idaho. And that population is getting hammered by all three sides, so Nevada hunters, Utah hunters, and Idaho hunters, and it's down. So they came and requested a decrease of 3 permits, and we agreed with that and recommend approval. Jacobs Creek and Hardscrabble, these two are split recommendations, so they're a little different. Jacobs Creek came to us last year, and they requested an increase. They're on an any bull unit. They requested an increase of 10 bull elk for a total of 20 permits for the CWMU. And at that time, the biologist let them know that's fine, but we're 1,500 elk over objective on this unit, and we expect help in return and with antlerless harvest. And the biologist felt like a fair number was 20. They flew it. The population around there will handle that harvest, and hopefully we can make some progress towards that objective. The Jacobs Creek would like to maintain 5. So again, on that one, if you go with the DWR recommendation, we're recommending 20, and the operator would like to maintain 5. Hardscrabble, same unit, 1,500 elk over objective. They are currently at 15, but they would like to reduce that by 8 and go to 7. And again, we need help on that unit with antlers harvest on private lands, and to make progress towards that objective. If we take that reduction, it wouldn't help.
So, Rebecca, we're actually looking at whatever it says in the under the public.
Yes.
187 or 2015.
Yeah, so if you go with the division's recommendation for Jacobs Peak and Hardscrabble, it will be 20 and 15. If you go with the operator's request, it'll be a reduction of 15, so it'll be 5, or a reduction of 8. And that column is a little confusing. I'm sorry about that.
So Deseret, do they actually want 210?
Yeah, so if you look at, they want 180. I'm sorry. That includes the number. Everywhere except for the split recommendations, everywhere, you're approving the number in the public column. or public or private comment.
Mr. Chairman, are you taking questions at this time?
I guess if it's confusing, I'll take questions.
I've got a question. I'm here to represent the Northeastern region. Why am I doing an action item on the Northern region?
So
I don't want them done on our region.
They already did.
So that's the line. So, I mean, just barely in Justin's recommendation, that permits are presented statewide for the RACs to give input. And
nothing about
it. Our hunters go down there.
I've hunted the Hartsgravel personally.
You guys feel comfortable with it?
I mean, with what I've seen
there. An action item on another region.
All my deer points, I'm waiting for a Ponsonbon tag. I'm avid about the Ponsonbon. So just because I live here doesn't mean...
When I took on the job, it was to be representative of the Northeastern region. I'm totally online.
Well, you've been doing this for a number of years.
I've brought this up every time.
But there has been a little bit of a change in some of the recommendations not going through here. So they've heard you.
Because you go back on my record, I won't vote. And that's the reason. I just don't.
We don't keep records anymore.
Speak for yourself.
I think the answer is it's a statewide resource. I understand that you represent this region. And when it's taken to the board, that's how it's viewed, is that you represent this region. And the northern region obviously weighs in on theirs as well. But it is a statewide resource, and we feel like all the RACs need an opportunity to view.
He represents the folks here in the northeast region.
And they hunt some of these.
Just like was just brought up here, this individual hunts and wants to hunt and is passionate about the Ponsonbon. So he's also representing this person that hunts on the Ponsonbon. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm trying to say. Thanks, boys.
But if I've never been to any of these places, I don't know anything about it.
Can I always
dress up qualified and make it a vote on?
Ask him what
tell
he
me about all the public and their input.
That's why you reach out to your fellow agriculture people and see if they have any input or personal feelings about it. Or members of the public where you live.
I think we're getting way off track here. If you don't feel comfortable, you come stay. Okay. Middle Ridge was a pronghorn CWMU. Middle Ridge, after one season there, they pushed all the pronghorn out of the ag. And so there were no pronghorn to hunt, and we don't want...
Good hunters.
Yeah. We don't need a bunch of unsatisfied hunters. They requested to remove pronghorn, and we agreed with that, so we recommend removing pronghorn from that CWMU's antlers. Southeastern region, Schofield East. This is the north end of the Manti, and that's an area where we really could use more harvest on private land. They request an increase of 11 permits, and we recommend approval on that. Patmos Ridge, an area, a new elk CWMU, an area that looked like really good elk habitat, a little bit lower in elevation, and the elk just never showed up. So we had a hunt there this last year, and it didn't work out well. So we recommend removing all the antlerless permits from that. They asked us to, and we recommend approval on that. Roan Cliffs and Preston Nutter Ranch, both of these units are currently under objective. For elk, we're getting the harvest we need. They recommended a reduction in their antlerless permits, and the biologists felt like they could support that. Alton, talking about the Ponsonbon. Alton asked for an increase in elk permits down there because they felt like there are a few more elk there than they want to see. And we felt like we could use help in managing that population as well. So we recommend that increase in approving those. So just as a quick summary, the public permits, there are 9 two-doe permits, 5 single doe permits, 1,145 cow elk permits, and 96 antlerless pronghorn permits that will go to the public for a total of 1,264 public permits. And then on the other side of that is the 318 private permits.
Thank you. Appreciate that. A question by the right. No questions. Well, Dr. Liber, you're the only public I think here left. You got any questions?
I feel obligated to come up with a question, but Clint threatened me.
All right.
You went back to his long Christmas roots.
Comments, Brother Ash.
From
anybody want to entertain a motion? If everybody has
a motion. My motion that we accept the recommendations as presented by the DWR.
Do we have a motion? Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
That was Brett. Brett, second it. Any discussion? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And are you opposed or abstaining?
I'm not qualified to vote.
You're abstaining. One abstention. Mitch. All right. Well, Cole, you're still up for the CWNU Atlas variance request.
Okay, this is something that we haven't done it this way before, but we realized we needed to. In the rule, it allows for CWUs that don't meet the minimum specifications of the rule to apply for a variance before the CWU Advisory Committee. And the Advisory Committee is independent of the RAC process. It's a group of very similar makeup of private land, sportsmen, and CWU operators. That hear these requests. They also hear formal complaints and make recommendations. And they're allowed to make a recommendation independent of the division. And this year we had a couple of those come through, so we felt it important to take those before the RAC and our obligation to take them to the board. So with that, we'll start. So Missouri Flat and Black Point CWMUs, this is on the Pavant. These two CWMUs just sold to the same corporation or landowner. At that time, our attorneys advised the gentleman that was going to purchase the properties that if he wanted to buy the entities, he wouldn't need a variance to continue operation as is. But because the CWMUs do have some non-contiguous property, that he if he just bought them and wanted to change the name, that he would have to buy a variance or apply for a variance. The owner felt like it, even though he could do it the other way, he felt like it was really important to try to be as upfront and as honest as he could. And that's why he did it and changed the name and then applied for the variance. So there are, keep in mind, there are 40,000 contiguous acres of property in the CWU. The variance really is to incorporate the mountain property, which is that 3474 that you see crosshatched in the middle of the green there. So the committee heard his request and they made a unanimous decision to accept the variance. And the reasons why, there are a couple reasons why. One, Missouri Flat has operated successfully as a CWU since the posted hunting unit days, so since the conception of this, without any issues, and they've operated with this separation. There are clear boundaries up there on the mountain property, and it's easy to distinguish that from the forest. The other reason why is because the group that purchases currently operate two other CWUs, and they have very high ratings, and they do it very successfully as well. And the division, we felt confident that it can continue to operate well as a CWU as well, and so we also recommend approval of the variance. The Sandy Ranch was another one. They came to us. They're currently a member of the Henry Mountain LOA, Landowner Association. They came to the division and had a proposal. They currently own 4,250 acres of contiguous property. property that's split between the Henry Mountain and the Boulder unit. But they said what we'd really like is to form a CWMU. And they proposed trading 600 acres of public access on the mountain, on the Henry Mountain's mountain land, and then to public access, and then allowing, and then working towards acquiring CITLA and BLM ground before their three-year COR expires. And I know that when you hear acquiring BLM ground, I think it takes an act of Congress, but in the, I forget what you guys call your management plans, in the
resource management,
in the resource management plan for the unit, the BLM has actually specified and said, no, we would like our property on the mountain to be contiguous, so we would be willing to sell or trade or whatever we need to do to make that happen. So the Sandy Ranch does have probably a possibility of working towards that contiguous acreage. The advisory committee heard the recommendation, and they felt like at this time that although it was a, although they could see that there were positives, that it really just, it didn't meet what the variance request was for. And so they said, let's deny the variance at this time, but we'll support the CWMU if the Sandy Ranch can acquire the additional acreage before the December 2016 Wildlife Board meeting. And the division, we support that as well. We felt like, although the access to the private ground on the mountain would be great, that it just, and sometimes under acreage CWMUs can work. We've also run into a lot of problems with them. And those numbers seem to work more consistently, the 5,000 acres for deer, the 10,000 acres for elk. So we agree with that. The final variance request that came before the board was the Deer Creek CWMU. Deer Creek would really like to become an elk CWMU. They're currently 6,700 acres with the possibility of reaching 8,200 acres, according to the operator. There is enough private ground in this area that they could reach the 10,000. The advisory committee heard the variance request, and again, this is one where, although there's no doubt that they could probably harvest the bulls up there they need to, this unit is chronically over-objective and difficult to manage. And really, from the CWMUs in the area, what we need and what we expect is cow harvest and help with population management. And so the advisory committee heard some of the concerns, and they made the recommendation that in 2016, the operator should work to harvest at least 30 cow elk on the property to demonstrate that he can cooperate in that in population management, and also work to obtain those 10,000 acres. Wade Heaton made a great point here. He said, do you realize that in the Poncegon CWMU, there are 42 landowners? That it takes a lot of work to get these things where they need to be. You can do it. If the private land exists, you can make it happen. So work to get those, work to meet that minimum. And then there have also been some concerns about treatment of public hunters on the CWMU. So we're going to come back and talk to the guys and see how they felt like they were treated. And that motion passed 7-1. And the division supported that to deny the variance at this time as well. And that's it.
Question by the record.
I got one, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Just from my own knowledge, the permits on the Missouri Flats, where it's a split property, can they take all those vouchers and incorporate the entire CWMU and hunt it on that extended portion, if they so chose? Or is there anything saying, you know, for this area you should really only hunt this much and then disperse?
Yeah, so, I mean, the way the CWMU program works, the private hunter would have access to
anything
unless it's off limits to both private and public. And then they have, the public hunter would have access to it unless, but they could direct their private hunter. I guess what I would say to resolve that concern is that
No concern.
Just a question.
Just a question.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Another question. I guess as a Like if I get a landowner tag, or if a landowner, he has to let you on there, but only like 2 days or 3 days, isn't it, to actually hunt, and he gets to pick those days?
So it depends on if it's a buck or bull permit or if it's a cow permit. If it's a cow permit, they just change the rule from 2 to 3 days. They're supposed to work with you. And most of these guys really try hard to work with the public hunters to allow their status to line up and get you there when the cows are there too. So if it's a buck, it's 5 days.
Okay.
Buck or bull.
Okay. Other questions? Questions by the public?
Once again, I got threats.
All right. Comments by the way.
Get in line.
Well, we'll entertain a motion on this particular action item. The action item is to approve those. No, approve or deny, I guess, those variances.
I motion that we approve the recommendations as presented by the DWR for the variances.
Okay, we have a motion. That was a damn great motion. I have a second. Missy seconded. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. With one abstention, was that Mitch?
Yeah.
One abstention, Mitch.
I only did decide on camp.
All right, next on our agenda, the last item tonight is a hunter education rule amendments. And Kirk, we'll turn the time to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will be short and sweet.
I appreciate that.
I'm here to present Rule R657-23 of the Hunter Education Rule. The little background to Hunter Education nationally, how it's managed and dealt with nationally, there's a national organization, it's the International Hunter Education Association, and the membership of this organization consists of all the state hunter education administrators. And what the association does, they develop the minimum standards that hunter education programs should meet in order for that certification to be good in every state. So as long as our program meets the IHEA minimum standards, our hunter education blue card is honored in all of North America. Prior to 2014, the IHEA standards address the traditional instructor-led type course with a minimum of 10 hours of classroom time. In those standards, they did not address the online delivery method or distance learning opportunities. The technology is now brought forth and are becoming very popular nationally. In 2014, we adopted a new set of standards. We put together a committee that had a bunch of the IHEA membership, the Hunter Ed coordinators, also private companies that provide these online training courses. They were on this committee. They used professional educators to establish the standards. And what they looked at is they identified three main purposes for Hunter education of what a student should know when they come out of that class. And it's all geared around safety, responsibility, and legal. And they want to focus on knowledge-based and skill-based learning objectives with hunter education rather than putting them saying, okay, you got to be in a classroom for 10 hours, show a bunch of videos that were produced in 1960 and talk about a whole bunch of stuff that's really nice to know rather than the absolute need to know. So the IHEA is focusing on the need to know components of hunter education. Our current rule in Utah states that a traditional instructor-led class will be a minimum of 12 hours in length. our online field day. This is a follow-up field day after the student completes an online course. Is right now set at 5 hours minimum. Also, we have a shooting proficiency test in our rule right now, essentially a marksmanship test. With our hunter education basic course, the instructor-led course, we're going to continue with all these key components that are recommended by the IHA to teach. The only thing that we're looking to reduce in our instructor-led course is introduction to muzzle loading, introduction to archery, where those are nice to know topics, really don't have much effect on safety, responsibility, and legal in the field. So we're looking at reducing those out of our basic course. Currently, our basic course does not include hands-on exercises as a mandatory activity in the classes. Our field day does. Our online field day does. We're looking to adjust the course curriculum for the instructor-led course to include these mandatory hands-on exercises that each and every student will do. What we went back and studied all the hunting incidents in Utah over the past 20 years, and we identified what are some of the key components or causes of these incidents. And so we identified these six activities or exercises that address specifically, had they done these in class, each and every student, it would have addressed eliminating or reducing one of these hunting incidents in the field. So that's where we're headed with our basic hunter education curriculum. This continues on with the curriculum to demonstrate or show that we're going to keep a lot of that meat in the program. We're looking at the videos, the old videos we got that were 40 minutes long that many of us in here saw when we were 12 years old taking hunter education. And we're going to topic-specific videos, very short, to the point, and give the instructor some flexibility in running his class or her class. So what we're proposing and the action that the RAC and Wildlife Board will take is we're proposing the instructor-led course that we don't identify minimum classroom time. That if as long as the material is taught and the students know it, understand it, can demonstrate it and do it, then that could be 6 hours, that could be 8 hours, that could be 10 hours. Also with the online field day, eliminate the 5 hour minimum and go to no minimum on that. That way it gives the instructor flexibility. If he has 5 students on a field day, they may be able to accomplish all these activities, these exercises in 2 hours rather than making them stay around for 5 hours. The other proposal is continue a live fire exercise. We feel it's important that each and every student handle a firearm, that they shoot it. The instructor is involved in that exercise. But what we're proposing is to drop the marksmanship test component. Let's just not test them on their marksmanship skill. Let's make sure they can be safe with that firearm when they go out into the field. There's a phrase that we use in hunter education. We feel strong with it. Tell me I'll forget, show me I'll remember. We want to get to that involvement, I will understand. So with these changes, we'll be able to get the students involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. questions by the RAC? Questions by the public?
Well, Batty.
Oh, yes.
Help me understand how taking the marksmanship test out of that keeps them safe. If somebody's on my property, I want to know they're proficient, that where they aim that bullet, that's where it's going.
Okay. that's a good question, and that's come up many times. We took this proposal out to all of our hunter education instructors this year, and this has been the hot topic is the marksmanship test. We went back and researched from 2004 through 2014 all of the hunter education programs and their hunting incident rates in the United States to see what effect a live fire component has on the incident rates of people getting injured out hunting. And this is the results of what we found. There's only 20 states that even have a live fire component. We are the only state that has a proficiency test. Of those 20 states, the incident rate for 100,000 shooters or hunters was 4.9. Without a live fire, the incident rate is 4.8. So statistically, it's not there to say even the live fire component is critical. So marksmanship, yes, is very important. We will continue to teach marksmanship. That'll still be part of course curriculum. It's just getting down to that test. What we have seen since the minimum hunting age was eliminated for small game is we're seeing smaller and smaller students coming through class. They're bringing in Grandpa's 22 rifle that's way too big for them, that hasn't been sighted in for 20 years. And they're struggling because the equipment doesn't fit them properly. They can still demonstrate safety. It's just they struggle with the equipment to pass the test sometimes.
I had the opportunity last year to attend one of the hunter safety education classes in this very room and then go up another day and see the marksmanship test. And what they did was... basically, you had to qualify the target. If you didn't that time, then they had another round, and you did it again. If you didn't that time, you had another round, you can't do it again. So eventually, everybody did it, but it might have taken them two or three times doing the same thing in order to get them. You know, but I don't know that they gained a whole lot more from the very first time they did it. But they just tried harder, I guess.
So are we seeing a reduction in volunteers to lead and teach these classes because of the time consumption that is involved? Because with the decrease of classroom time, decrease of field time, or no minimum, is that a big key factor with this? Is, you know, we're...
As far as have we had a decrease in instructor base, therefore we want to make these changes? No, we have not.
That's not why, but is that potential reason why we have a decrease?
Maybe restate understand your question.
So if we have a decrease in instructors, and have we polled them, or are these concerns that they have is their own time as well, plus how much time it takes for some of this stuff to do?
Yes. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we travel the state. We do a spring seminar, is what we call them, 13 different ones statewide, where we invite the instructors in. We have a banquet for them. We train them on what's coming up. We rolled this out and presented it to all of the instructors statewide. And we have right around 500 volunteer instructors statewide. So each and every one of them has had the opportunity to review this, look at the new lesson plan. And yes, some of them had the same concern on marksmanship. The majority of them support our proposal of going this direction. This slide here shows you the trend of what the students actually want. What type of hunter education class do they actually want to take? Since 2003, that's when we started our internet or online course. You can see the white is the traditional course, and the Macho Salmon is the online students. These are actual students graduating. The traditional course, there's just not that much interest in it anymore. The online course is really taken off, and that's where the students are going for their education.
I have a question with that. Because in 2006, I'm in that macho famine, as you call it. I came to hunting late in my life.
You were thinking they weren't listening, were you?
So I was just kind of curious because you mentioned that, you know, part of it. So I'm curious, is my blue card still valid in other states since the international didn't recognize our internet?
They did. They did recognize it.
They did.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they do recognize it, and yes, your blue card is still good.
But I'm just kind of curious, have you noticed the ages of it being, like me, an older adult who came into it later, taking that internet?
We are seeing older students typically trend towards the online, the internet. Just kind of sidebar, the trial hunting program, the WAVES Hunter Education for 3 years, we brought around a couple of years ago, the average age of the trial hunter is 22 years old. So that program is actually targeting this age group. And the online course does get to that very well.
Mr. Littlehome, I took kind of safety years ago when I was a scout. Me and Gail couldn't find it. So if I want to hunt in Colorado on our private ground, you're going to have to take a senior citizen. And I'm not very good on computers.
An interesting thing with Colorado. Colorado's state law is if you're born after 1949, you have to have hunter education. So I'm not going to ask your age or when you was born. They just implemented a new program that you can test out in Colorado. Yeah, you can go online and take a test online to meet their hunter education qualifications if you're older than 50.
Sneak attack. I'll give a granddaughter. That's true, Stuart. We can find a good one. It was done through the scouts, and we've got ground in Colorado. And I've got to take hunter's education.
Any other questions about the other act? Public questions? Comments? Then I'll entertain a motion.
I will make a motion that we accept the Hunter Education Rule Amendment that's presented.
I second it. Mitch seconded. All in favor?
Hey,
first one. Five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. Unanimous. I think part of that motion was to adjourn, wasn't it?
No, I'm motion that we adjourn.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Joe, folks,
there was no RAC meeting in May. Okay? So, don't expect one. There was going to be, but they canceled it. Thank you.